When we ask what a movie or novel is about, this is usually to collect a bit of information on it. When we ask what a poem is about, this tends instead to be shorthand for, okay, okay, but tell me what it means. In other words, it just reduces helter-skelter language to something I can get. Bottom line it for me, pal. I haven't got all day here. Suddenly, the clock is ticking. In effect, asking what a poem is about is like asking what music is about. And our inability to answer that question succinctly is hardly a testament to the meaningless of poetry, or music, for that matter. When we mistake a poem for a newspaper article or even an anecdote, then the expectations for a poem's language changes, and drastically. As Eliot said, poetry, quote, is a concentration, and a new thing resulting from the concentration, a very great number of experiences which to the practical and active person would not seem to be experiences at all, unquote. Indeed, at its best, a poem might be comprised of breath, desire, intelligence, and memory, our influences and conventions, rhythm and imagination, sound, narrative, history and spontaneous play, as well as reference, emotion, and the unconscious, and the music of the language itself. As Robert Creeley put it, simply, it is a complex. Poetry resists just this kind of disclosure. To me, that is part of a poem's unique power, our inability to reduce it. In fact, poetry is already a reduction, or, as one of my undergraduate students said recently, a compaction. We don't need to unpack a poem for its pleasures to be visited on us. Seldom do we get a chance to do so at a poetry reading, shuttling along with the poet's voice from poem to poem, one after another. This doesn't compromise our pleasure if the poems are any good. Indeed, it can heighten it to hear the poet's own cadences, timbre, accents, breath, asides, and silences even. But talking about it later won't ruin the poem or make snobs out of us. When did discussing something unknown or new threaten to make us elitists? Or perhaps it is liking or even loving something we don't fully understand that makes us sound pretentious? In that case, I am guilty. Much of what I love in poetry, admittedly, I do not fully understand. But then again, I don't fully understand the paintings of Basquiat, or my dog either, for that matter. But that doesn't prevent me from loving them, however irrationally. As Donald Hall puts it, quote, there are a thousand ways to love a poem. The best poets make up new ways, and the new ways mostly take getting used to, unquote. Yet, what is it that we lose in a defensive response against poetry? Perhaps, ironically enough, it prevents us from further access, as entry or passage, to our imaginations, to our ability to think in ways beyond our logical ken, to feel through language, perhaps especially to remain in a poem's uncertainties and doubts without any irritable reaching after fact or reason, as Keats famously wrote to his brother. Saying, I don't get it, or worse, blaming it on the overly obscure poets writing to show off, as Billy Collins claimed on Talk of the Nation, is just a way of rutting ourselves in the little trench we've dug to stay safe in the familiar, in the world we like to think we recognize and know. Poems destabilize that, seemingly effortlessly. So it's no wonder poets with their peculiar locutions and allusions appear blameworthy themselves, or worse, the institutions that support them. When did we learn to go around citing the meaninglessness of that which we don't yet understand? As a protective measure, I think I follow this. As my student Hannah says, we don't like to feel stupid, and poetry, it seems, can do that. It's a defense, right? It shields us from the object of our dismissal, the poem in this case, but more importantly, it prevents us from any obligation of having to participate in what the poem might mean. Abdication of our own ability to respond can be really satisfying. As we can fold our arms indignantly, look to either side, and say, well, this nonsense isn't my problem. And this dismissal can be funny, too, as the recent Onion headline parodying poetry's irrelevance to contemporary matters reads, quote, distressed nation turns to poet laureate for solace, saying later that, quote, their masterfully crafted verses and subtle explorations of interiority dispel the nation's fears in a way that nothing else can, unquote. The general public, Jarrell went on to say, quote, has set up a criterion of its own, one by which every form of contemporary art is condemned. This criterion is, in the case of music, melody. In the case of painting, representation. In the case of poetry, clarity. Instead of having to perceive, to enter, and to interpret these new worlds which new works of art are, the public can notice at a glance whether or not these pay lip service to its own principles and can praise or blame them accordingly. Unquote. Today, perhaps even jazz's unique rhythms and improvisatory modes are part of the culturally accepted Ken Burns approved art forms, even if Late Coltrane and Bitches Brew are still forbidden from the radio waves. Perhaps we have even grown accustomed to this estranging quality of modern visual art. We can look admiringly at a painting by Mark Rothko without straining to will it into a figure or rise in anger at its apparent disavowal of portraiture. We don't demand to know what it's about. It might be about color. And we can be pleased to see color manipulated compellingly. At least we can accept it as a fact of artistry, as artifice. Its former estranging capacity, now part of the familiar fold of what hangs on the walls of notable museums. Why, then, should a poem, simple as 30 or 40 words carefully ordered, generate so much anger and frustration, derision even? Because a poem may be in search of uncertainty and discord, full as it is of both curiosity and the unknown. A poem is at once an act of making, poesis, and an encounter, as Paul Celan reminds us. In an early essay, Celan writes, quote, now, I am a person who likes simple words. It is true, I had realized long before this journey that there was much evil and injustice in the world I had now left, but I had believed I could shake the foundations if I called things by their proper names. Unquote. In fact, the moment the poem has ended, it asks us for more. It lingers or bedevils or simply overwhelms us with its possibilities. It is comprised of language after all, and it has the capacity to differ and defer endlessly, ineluctably, sometimes even pleasurably. But why should this debate about poetry continue? Arguments about its death, its unfitness for modern life, its inability to accommodate human experience, its unapproachability and obscurity, and its myriad difficulties date back to well before even 1928 when Edmund Wilson asked, is verse a dying technique? By 1960, in his famous Meridian speech, Celan said, quote, ladies and gentlemen, it is very common today to complain of the obscurity of poetry. End quote. By the early 90s, it's Dana Gioia's undying Can Poetry Matter essay articulating many similar concerns over poetry's dwindling markets, if not its inaccessibility. Last month, in the Washington Post, Alexandra Petrie asked, is poetry dead? And I can't help but think of rapper LP saying, quote, the critics claiming every year hip-hop's over. Fuck you. Hip-hop just started. It's funny how the most nostalgic cats are the ones who were never part of it. Unquote. The assumptions there are that poets themselves are holding poetry back from gaining wider audiences. So why is this? Is it because poetry gets more and more obscure, less and less readable? No, not at all. Jarrell puts it like this, quote, in England today, few poets are as popular as Dylan Thomas. His magical poems have corrupted a whole generation of English poets, yet he is surely one of the most obscure poets who ever lived. End quote. Jarrell's point, and he cites many early wonderfully perplexed responses to Shakespeare, is that even if poetry is obscure, that's hardly a reason to not read it. Besides, Jay-Z's irregular accentual rhythms and Lil Wayne's arcane and prolix references and puns have hardly prevented them from appealing to millions, literally, today. In fact, I think this debate about poetry beyond its place in popular music resurfaces zombie-like again and again because poetry is the language art like no other, and it is precisely because of that lure of direct communication that we like to assume is possible with spoken and written language, that poetry continues to trouble as it swerves out of the realm of the expected, attendant as it is to setting the conventions of communication in place only to lay the promise of direct communication itself aside. Wittgenstein said this more elegantly in his notebooks when he wrote, quote, "Do not forget that a poem, although it is composed in the language of information, is not used in the language game of giving information," unquote. But that slipperiness of a poem, elusiveness even, is not a wall. That's an invitation to participate in the field of meaning any poem makes available on first hearing or reading.